Joining us on the line now is BBC music journalist Mark Savage. He's been a regular guest of Days for a while, but this is the first time we're getting to chat, which is really nice. We're going to be talking about the latest news from the world of music. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm not bad, Hannah. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Lovely to chat with you. It's nice to meet you, albeit virtually.
Isn't everything still virtual?
Oh, I know.
I still haven't done a face-to-face interview with anyone for ages.
Oh, it's strange, isn't it? How's your year been? Let's start there.
It's mostly been in this same room that I'm talking to you from now, in the attic of my house, which was supposed to be a playroom for the kids, but is now my office.
Oh, very weird. And how long have you been on with Dave for now?
Oh, years. I couldn't tell you how far back, maybe 3 or 4 years now.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. And I was looking you up, as it were, and looking back on your your history and everything. You've been a journalist, I know, for a while, but you were also a musician yourself in a band, weren't you?
Oh my goodness, yeah. Long, long time ago, in my misspent teenage years, I was in a band, and we weren't that big. We played a few gigs around university towns and did a few support slots, and then just kind of all fell apart, which is fine. That's what happens to most bands, and we weren't that good, if I'm quite honest. But I did end up, later on, I kind of got into writing music for TV shows and radio theme tunes and stuff like that, which I did for a while. That kept the bills paid while I was still trying to make my way as a journalist.
Mm. And you wanted to concentrate on music specifically when you went into journalism, did you?
Well, I think the best advice I ever got was stick to what you know. And I only know one thing, and that's music, because that's all I did as a kid. I was terrible at exams, terrible at all that kind of stuff. I just played records.
Yeah, brilliant. So you love what you do, I guess, now.
Yeah, I mean, it is the dream job, isn't it? You're getting to, you know, sit and chat to famous people and ask them impertinent questions and then write it up.
Yeah.
I can't complain at all.
And do you ever get starstruck?
Ooh, that's a good question. Do you know what? Not really anymore. I've done it long enough. Some interviews are more nervous than others. I had Madonna on the phone a couple of years ago.
Wow.
And yeah, that morning, I don't think I did anything else until the phone call ended. And then I was still in a cold sweat. but for the most part, no, it's fine. I think after a while, you get to realize that everybody, and this sounds like a cliche, but everybody is just human and they're probably as nervous as you are going into the interview, because they don't know what you're going to ask. They're worried they're going to get tripped up. And so I've always treated it as a chat. You know, I kind of feel like if I'm going to be asking them for really deep and personal information, because often they're writing songs about, you know, hugely emotional times, deaths and breakups and all sorts of stuff, that I kind of have to give them a bit of myself as well. So it becomes an exchange of information rather than just, you know, a kind of series of hard hitting Jeremy Paxman-esque questions.
And in general, are people nice to you?
Yeah. Do you know what? I've never had anyone storm out or any of that stuff. Maybe I'm too nice as an interviewer.
Oh, that's nice. That's good to be nice, though. It's nice to be nice.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, some people, it's all about the controversy with the interviews, but I've never been like that either. I think it's just nice to have a nice conversation with someone, and often that's all listeners want to hear as well.
But I also find that people will open up to you more if you're not being aggressive or pushing them. And so often I find that, particularly by speaking to musicians about music, which weirdly a lot of journalists don't seem to do, that makes them feel like they're talking to someone who's genuinely interested in what they do. And then they are more likely to open up on the more emotional stuff later on in the interview. I mean, that's not always the case, but I kind of, that's my philosophy.
Yeah, there's been lots of kind of car crash TV interviews, haven't there, where they've had, I won't mention any names, but where they've had musicians on who are obviously there to talk about their music and promote their new album, and all the interviewer wants to know is about their love life and sex life and things, and that doesn't always go down so well.
No, well, can you imagine being asked about that yourself?
Well, exactly. Looking at what's been happening recently, one of the big things that everyone's talking about is Adele's comeback, her latest album, her fourth album, set for release in a few days' time.
Well, it's the single that comes out this Friday, so just 56 hours to wait.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
So first, like you say, first time in 6 years we're going to hear new music from Adele. She's played a little snippet. She put some instrumental piano music up on Twitter, and then she did an Instagram Live over the weekend where she played fans the first verse. It sounds, as you might imagine, like a breakup ballad, because that is where Adele excels. The lyrics seem to be about her divorce from Simon Konecki, which happened a couple of years ago. She sings, "I know there is hope in these waters, but I can't bring myself to swim." So it sounds like it's going to be a big tearjerker when we hear it, and that will herald the album, which we think is coming mid-November, although that hasn't been confirmed yet, and it's going to be called 30. Now, Adele is actually 33 now, but 30 is the year when the breakup happened. So as she often does, her other albums are called 19, 21 and 25. This is the kind of diary of a really pivotal year in her life.
Mm-hmm. So it's funny, isn't it, when you hear what the snippet of the single, which I've listened to, it sound, I mean, you can kind of tell straight away with the piano and everything that it's going to be the sort of thing that we'd expect from Adele. But I guess fans of Adele wouldn't want to hear anything different. I mean, it would be kind of odd if you heard like a drum and bass beat coming out or something, wouldn't it?
Well, she did joke at one point that she was going to make a drum and bass album. And, you know, she was hanging around with people like Skepta, so there was that kind of, you know, she's a big fan of rap. She turned up to see Stormzy at the O2 a couple of years ago, and there was, you know, people kind of thought, well, maybe she'll try something new. You know, when you go through a divorce and you're on your fourth album, you maybe want to throw all of the conventions out the window and see what else you can do. But I think certainly the first single sounds like a very gentle reintroduction to Adele. This is what we love her for. And maybe the album will have a few more textures. We know she's been working with Max Martin, who is the big hit maker for people like Britney Spears and Coldplay, like really solid gold pop music. She's only done one song with him before. And also with a lesser known producer from London called Inflow, who does these really, really beautiful kind of retro soul sounds. He produced acts like Michael Kiwanuka and Little Sims. So it'll be interesting to hear what she's doing with him. That makes it sound more like a kind of old soul Marvin Gaye, Al Green kind of thing. Mm. And I think her voice would suit that really, really well.
Yeah, exciting. And of course, she looks completely different, doesn't she? I mean, she's lost a massive amount of weight. She looks great. She had a fun appearance on Saturday Night Live when she guest hosted it in October and kind of took the mic out of herself, didn't she?
Yes, absolutely. What did she say in that? She said because of COVID restrictions, she'd had to leave half of herself back in London.
Yeah, yeah, this is the half I chose, she said. Yeah,
that's right. And, you know, she did an interview with Vogue last week where she talked a little bit about the weight loss and said that it was all down to exercise. She was exercising 3 times a day, which sounds terrifying and nightmarish,
yeah,
to me. And it's not about diet, and it was just about feeling better for, you know, for her mental health. A lot of people do take to exercise to feel better about themselves, particularly after going through something as traumatic as a divorce.
Yeah. So
she does. She looks very different. But if you watch that Instagram Live where she was holding her dog up to the camera and talking about her favorite flavor of crisps, she is still very much the same Adele.
Great. And an interesting piece on the Beatles. For almost 50 years, Sir Paul McCartney has shouldered the blame for breaking up the Beatles, but he said recently in an interview that it was prompted by John Lennon.
Yeah, so this is really interesting. Like, for a long time, people have said that Paul McCartney was the one who broke the Beatles up. We knew that John Lennon had kind of walked away first. He wasn't there at the last ever Beatles recording session at Abbey Road. But it was Paul McCartney who put out a press release saying that he had walked away from the band and he would never write with John Lennon again. And in 1970, it was Paul McCartney who sued the rest of the band to dissolve their business relationship. So although John had gone, he'd always left the option open that he would come back. And people always said, well, it was Paul who drove the nails into the coffin, so to speak. But he's done an interview that's going to go out on BBC Radio 4 later this month, where that was put to him, and he got quite defensive, which is interesting. You don't often hear that steely side of Paul McCartney. He's such a nice guy. And he said, no, that is not the case. John came into the office and said, I want out. This is like a divorce. And that was the end of the Beatles. I would have been happy to continue, he says in this interview, but it was John who said he wanted no more part of it. So that's kind of a rewriting of history. And of course, Paul gets to say that, and John sadly can't put his side of the story anymore.
Yeah.
But it definitely turns the received wisdom on its head a little bit.
I wonder why he decided to say that after all these years, whether it was a really conscious thing, it's about time I spoke up, or whether it just sort of came out and he didn't really think anything of it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, sometimes you say something in the heat of an interview that reveals how you really feel, and he can be quite cautious when he gives interviews, Paul McCartney. But I think as well, it rankles with him to have been cast as the villain in this story. I think he was, you know, he saw the Beatles as his life's work, and he genuinely didn't want them to break up, even though in the end things became, you know, so bad that they couldn't have been in the same room together. And so I think he was pushing back against those claims a little bit. It's a fascinating interview, though. I've heard not the whole thing, but I've heard that segment in full, and there's only been some clips released so far. And it's a really, really fascinating listen.
Fantastic. And we can get that on BBC Radio 4. When did you say?
23rd of October. It goes out on a programme called This Cultural Life, and that'll be on BBC Sounds as well, if you can't tune into Radio 4 in Spain.
Yeah, fantastic. And big news about Tina Turner selling all her music and the rights to all her music.
Yeah, that's right. So this is part of a longer pattern. We've seen it, you know, with artists like Blondie and Bob Dylan, Fleetwood Mac as well, have all been kind of getting rid of the publishing side of their music, trading in the future royalties that they will earn when their songs are streamed or played on the radio in return for a huge lump sum, which is often, you know, in the tens and hundreds of millions of pounds. And Tina Turner has done that as well. Now, actually, the reports that I've heard, nobody knows the exact figure, but the reports I've heard is that it's only really earned her about £37 million.
I say only.
I say only. But, you know, compared to Bob Dylan, where the figure was reportedly around the £300 million mark,
gosh,
it's quite low. And that's because Tina Turner didn't write many of her biggest songs. You know, Nutbush, City Limits is the only real massive hit where she has a writing credit. But even so, she's in her retirement, which she announced earlier this year. She's now got that massive lump sum that means she's secure for the rest of her life. And also she has stopped her music falling into other people's hands after she dies. You know, as we've seen with artists like Prince, where they didn't have a will, there's a huge fight over who owns the rights to her songs. But now she can retire safe in the knowledge that somebody is looking after that music for her. And the other interesting thing about this is she's also sold the rights to her name and her likeness for things like merchandising and advertising. So this company, BMG, who are a big record label in Europe, now basically own Tina Turner's name.
How interesting. So this isn't an unusual thing to have done then?
No, it's become more and more common over the last year. I think partly because a lot of musicians have seen revenues from concerts dry up over COVID, and, you know, streaming revenues do compensate for that a little bit, but they tend to come in very small amounts infrequently. And so what certainly artists who've got a reliable back catalogue are doing is they are saying, well, if we hand this over to somebody else who can give us a lump sum now, they can worry about all the admin of collecting that over the next 100 years, and we'll sit here happy in our mansions.
Yeah. Oh, fair play to her then.
Yeah, exactly.
Why not?
She's earned it.
Yeah,
she's put
definitely
enough hours in on the stage, hasn't she?
Oh, absolutely. What an incredible career. Well, it's been fabulous to chat with you, Mark Savage. Thanks so much for joining us. And if listeners want to follow you, and you're always writing articles and things so people can see it all the time on the BBC, is that the best place to go?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. If you go to the entertainment pages of the BBC News website, I'm usually doing something there.
Okay, fantastic. Mark, thanks so much for joining us. Look forward to catching up again soon.
Thanks a lot, Hannah. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.